From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report, a Tuesday edition. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason out of the office this afternoon on holiday. I hope you're enjoying your winter break. Coming up during this half hour, no numbers live from the CME Group or any place else, but we do have some special programming with you. We sat down with Wayne Nelson and Paul Cooley to talk about the commodity markets, that whole program for you in just a bit as we make our way through this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. If you're there, go visit the right-hand side of the page and look up the Outlook Meetings calendar. You'll find the whole series of programming that we have coming up in the months of January, February, and March. If you'd like to schedule an Outlook panel for your area, just give Dave or I a call. You can call and ask for either one of us at 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300. You can schedule an Outlook panel with Dave or with me. We'll make sure that we get out and bring some of our analysts along the Outlook panels. You can find the schedule at willag.org over on the right-hand side of the page. Just look for the Outlook Meetings calendar schedule.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Have you signed up yet for our evening with the Voices of Illinois Agriculture? Don't tarry, because this will happen pretty quickly. There are only about 100 slots, and if you have not signed up, this is our fundraiser for scholarships to the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. It's set for Friday evening, January the 24th, at the Spice Box on the second floor of Bevier Hall. That's on the south end of the Urbana-Champaign campus in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. We'll kick off the evening with a keynote address by none other than the president of the University of Illinois. I can't tell you how happy I am that Bob Easter will be able to address us that evening. And then we'll move into our dinner and eventually get to a really good marketing panel, including Steve Fried from ADM Investor Services, Pete Manhart, Wayne Nelson, and Jackie Vanks. Daryl Good will be there to wrap up things, and Gary Schnittke will talk about crop insurance. Oh, and the president of ADM Investor Services, Tom Kadlec, says he'd like to say a few words too. It'll be brief. It should be a fantastic evening if you didn't make it to the first one. How about the second annual Voices of Illinois Agriculture event that kicks off at 6 p.m. January the 24th? You can find all the details on our website at willag.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, you remember about 18 months ago in the summer of 2012, I took off with a group of farmers on a bus, and we made our way to New Orleans and visited Dan Zwicker, the export facility that belongs to CGB and Zinno there. We're going to do it again, not to Zinno this time around, and a bit shorter, March 10th, 11th, and 12th. We're going to go see John Deere in Moline, the combine plant. We'll watch those being made. And then the next day in Waterloo at the tractor plant. We're going to put both of them back to back and make a trip there to Moline, Illinois, to watch John Deere make combines and tractors. It should be a really good plant tour. I hope you can go along with us. It's scheduled for March 10, 11, and 12. All the details, again, on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. I hope you can join us for our second Follow the Corn trip. This one is Follow the Corn. John Deere will be in Moline and Waterloo on the 10th, 11th, and 12th of March. Find all the details again at willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio with us today, Paul Cooley and Wayne Nelson. We're going to talk just a little bit about what happened over the last year in the marketplace, maybe some ideas that producers can deploy on their own farms in terms of hedging, and we'll probably cover all kinds of things. Paul, thank you so much. You know, the first thing is you've been retired for what, a year and, I don't know, 4 or 5 months now. How's it treating you?
Well, thanks for asking me to be here. It's a wonderful experience to see everyone and with you and, of course, Wayne, and we've had talk to Matt and Mike Zuzulo here a few minutes ago. But it's a wonderful experience to be back here in this WILL AM 580 Ag broadcast with you, and it's a lot of fun to be here.
What you been doing?
Well, been going to some land sales this fall, and of course we're still working on major drainage projects, and of course clearing certain old farmsteads and things like that. Busy at the lake, and once again I feel like I'm a field hand with Pat doing a lot of yard work.
I hate to ask, did you go to land sales and stand, or did you hold your hand up?
Well, we've been doing a little bit of both. The big thing about the land sales are that there's still a lot of money out there, and there's some enormous players playing the game. It seems like the good quality land is still very much in demand, and when farms are sold, it looks like there's still 3 to 4 or 5 people in each community that are willing to go up and buy the ground. And yeah, it is really a sign of strength in the community.
A sign of strength, Paul, but the last couple of weeks and these would be the first 2 weeks in December when we're recording, there have been some no sales out there where people said, no, that's not enough. I'm not going to make that sale, but they didn't get the bids for it either, and I don't know what that really means or what $4.20 corn means to land over time. If it stays that way, are you concerned at all, or you think land obviously still is a good investment?
Well, the old deal of interest rates and the price of grain still a major factor in playing it. A lot of the pros tell me that the land that is selling is possibly been in trusts and multiple ownerships on these tracts of ground, and we have to usually say it's time to put them in somebody else's hand. As far as the price levels, I think the farmer still has a lot of money in his pocket. What's one reason why I don't think he was very aggressive at selling corn this last year in the fashion that he has? But the big factor here is that land even went up when the stock market crashed a few years ago. So it seems like it's a lot of strength in it. Another boom that I think that's going to help agriculture, particularly farmland in the south half of the state, is we're going to see the talk about oil drilling, and I think that that's something that could also give land in the south half of the state some extra strength.
You know, state boundaries sometimes are arbitrary. Sometimes they're drawn for geographic reasons. There are places between Illinois and Indiana, it's clear why those lines were drawn. Do you have a different feeling about land values in parts of Indiana, Wayne?
Well, I think that, number one, the ground here in Illinois has brought a little better price. But part of it is because it is a little darker ground and a little better rated ground. And I think, as Paul was saying, some of those farms that didn't sell probably didn't have quite as good a soil, quite as good as rating as far as the APH, as far as raising crops and whatever. We're still seeing the good ground bring big money, and there are people willing to step up and do it. We're watching most every farm, if it's near somebody and hasn't been for sale for a long time, they're very, very interested, unless somebody with a lot of money like Jimmy John's or somebody steps in.
I always, our friend John Bondurant down in Memphis, he always quotes this 20 times cash rent price, $200 an acre times 20 is $4,000 in the South. And we all know that's fairly productive farmland. We know that that's probably a better return than a central Illinois farm as of today.
Yeah, John Bondurant, an interesting case, because we saw him on Wednesday of this week, talk to him in Sykeston, Missouri. And this is, 13th day, rather, of December. And I asked John that question because he was on one of our Will Ag panels. He had gotten out, as you know, of some of his farmland, and he's been buying. But he's been buying homes. And I asked him, why not farmland rather than homes, or if there was a reason for that. And he said that he thought homes would appreciate in value more. So he was looking at the value. He didn't say wouldn't buy farmland, but he thought that home prices had gone down so far that it would be better to invest in that type of real estate for him, at least at this point, than it is in farmland. So I don't know what that means. And I will put, by the way, if I haven't already, the John Bondurant, Dan Zwicker, Jackie Vakes, Sykeston, Missouri event up on our website at willag.org. It will be in the Commodity Week section, so you can go find it. But you're going to have to go find it over in Commodity Week. So you have to go to the right-hand side of the page and find Commodity Week, and then you'll have to look through and find it. So you can listen to John and to Dan. Anytime you get those two guys together, it's a really interesting, it's a really interesting event. And this one was awfully good, and I hope you enjoy it. But again, it's at willag.org. Okay, so there are some things you've been thinking about, because you're a farmer, about all that silver that's out there, all those bins, and what producers can, should, and might do. There's a line that Dan likes to use, and he used it again, is the problem with having a bin is that producers are going to use it. And sometimes they don't need to use it. But there are other times when they should use it, and they can continue to use it in different fashions.
A couple of trips we made during the harvest time, we noticed that the piles weren't as large in a lot of these small communities that have these giant country elevators. And one of the stories was that the farmers used their own bins back on the farm that they hadn't used in several years. We are under the opinion and have heard and see these big, large storage complexes that are going up. So I did a little mathematics, and if we use the old idea that it costs at commercial grain storage facilities 18 to 20 cents to store your grain to January, and then if a farmer, and of course John is the champion at telling us and reminding us, you do have to have at least a $2.50 to $3 line of credit to do your own hedging. And that's important. But you would have picked up another 40 cents a bushel on a basis that was like 25 under. And now you're getting basis levels of 25 to 30 over. And with this cold weather and rivers being froze up and lower prices, the basis levels could even go up. So we add this up, we get a 50 to 60 cent premium of using our own home owned farm storage versus commercial storage and hedging this operation yourself. And then you have this old trick of on-call storage in which you say, okay, you sell it to the big ethanol plant or the big dry corn mill or the big river terminal, and when they want it hauled, you get another premium for that. So there's all kinds of tricks. If you do own your own storage, do your own hedging, but it's only for a select few and person that does have nerves of steel.
If you're on call, better have a big snowplow in front of you, too. Right?
You bet.
Because the day they're going to call is the day they aren't getting grain from anybody. I think that's true. Okay, I want you to take me back because I don't quite understand all the numbers you gave me on how you got to the 50 or 60 extra cents that you're going to put
in
your pocket.
Well, usually, you know, as a country grain elevator or a large exporter of grain, you usually buy new crop corn and soybeans on a fairly wide basis. And, for example, most of the corn for new crop was probably bought at 25 or 30 under the December futures. And as the prices went down, the basis got better, and then there was this basically artificial withholding. The farmers didn't sell as much during harvest and after harvest, and we've seen this basis rally considerably, mainly good ethanol demand. That's been one of our big market makers, industrial uses, and also it exports to some extent. So that the basis improved.
But you did you build in a price for the storage on the farm itself?
I mean, you gave it. I did that, but also you see you save that 18 to 20 cents if you had hauled it to commercial.
Right, you're not paying that, but you're paying for the bin.
Right, you're paying.
But it's cheaper for the bin.
Right. And also, you have that ability to harvest grain another 8 hours a day once the local elevator closes down. So there's a lot of other benefits, and then also your drying that you can also do, and possibly a little less shrink factor by using on-the-farm storage versus commercial storage. So there's some value-added benefits in here that a person, I think, needs to take advantage of. But the key here is locking in the hedges when you need to do it, and also using banks and lending institutions that aren't afraid to meet $2 margin calls.
So you're going to store it on your own farm, and then you're going to hedge. You're going to hedge what you have in the bank.
Hedge it through your local commodity broker, Wayne Nelson.
Is that a second hedge over what you would have done already on that crop, or just a single hedge?
Just a single hedge. Right. One of the things we always like to do is that, you know, if you have 200,000 bushels of storage, maybe do half of it with your local elevator. Do half of it on your own.
Farmers do this by bin sometimes, or do they just do it on 5,000 bushels and 10,000 bushel lots? And
it depends, Todd. I mean, each farmer has a different level of risk ability to take that he wants to sleep with at night. And that tells you some people are going to do everything and maybe double, and others are going to do very, very little. The one thing that we do want to recommend along with this is remember what an elevator man does do, and that is watch that grain to keep it from going out of condition. If you become your own elevator, you have to get a dryer big enough to handle what you're harvesting and be able to watch that and check it and go through and whatever and keep the corn in condition.
Yeah, and when you say dryer, you mean a dryer maybe on the bin, but potentially a dryer that goes before the bin.
Yeah. I mean, we think mainly, as a dryer that you go in a wet bin and you dry through and it goes into the bin dry, and then you got your fans to keep it in condition that way. We've been told already this year that down in Cloverdale, the four trucks in front of one of my customers said chunks coming out of trucks. That means that maybe they put their corn in the bin too wet and didn't go through a dryer, and maybe the air didn't dry it quite as good this year. But that's it. But Paul is right. There's been a lot of things. I mean, let's look here. We had tremendous carry from the December to the July corn, and yet we've seen very, very few farmers actually selling the carry out there that way. It's been, very advantageous. We talk about selling the grain and buying a callback. That's harder to do in the corn because any deferred month is already 20 cents or 10 cents above where it's at. So that makes it hard to do it. The beans, simple trick. That's why farmers sold more beans. If you want to turn around and buy beans back, they're cheaper. But one of the things we have to really watch for coming into this February time frame, let's face it, China is probably going to switch to South America on their beans and their production. And up until the last day, it's going to be really, really good. You just don't want to be there the day after they decide to switch.
One of the other things, too, is that the lending institutions with the cheap interest rates are basically setting certain lending and basic lines of credit that are for the sole purpose of hedging. And, of course, where we also have to also agree is that when it does take an experienced person that basically can divorce himself from that word margin call, and, of course, that takes a person that does have a lot of nerves and can sleep at night. And both of those things are extra things you have to put on that equation.
Yeah, and those are the hard things to do. When you have a lot of debt that's looking at you and a margin call that is really big potential.
The other thing is that the new grain storage, costs anywhere from probably $2.50 to $3 a bushel. The government has given some very wonderful tax benefits on that. But the big factor here is that it does give a tremendous amount of versatility to the farmer to have his own operation.
We found that the farmer basically has done it, number one, because the new combines, the new auger wagons, everything like that, they basically can't afford to sit in line and get their crop out of the field with the number of acres they're trying to do. They need some of their own storage to get dumped timely and run 18 to 20 hours a day when they want to run like that. That's one of the big reasons. Then along with that also, like Paul said, when we're looking at an ethanol plant to the north, an ethanol plant to the south, a processor here, maybe going to the river or whatever along the way, it does open up a lot of markets to you rather than just going to your favorite elevator.
Paul Cooley, I've built the storage. I have machinery that can fill it fairly quickly. I can dry it. I've shut the doors. How quickly should I be willing to open them up and empty that storage out?
Well, historically, this cold weather snap we have, whenever the river freezes, the trucks need to be moving. And this is the ideal time with this strong basis to make basis sales on a strong market. And to the reverse psychology is you can go on and sell that grain at these stronger basis levels and replace it with futures. The one dilemma here is, of course, you always hate to pay a premium to buy those futures back. Possibly another way is if you've already been hedged, it's still a wonderful time to move grain in the inventory. Why? Because the commercials are moving grain on frozen rivers as well.
Paul, when you look forward, since we're at the end of the year, for the next year and for the next decade, are you still optimistic for agriculture? And I'm thinking back to the times on the air when you were excited and thinking we're entering the go-go period like we had in the 1970s. There was a depression after that in the farm community. We called it the 1980s. What do you think?
Well, Todd, I get nervous when I hear about the word when people are anti-ethanol or something like that, because we all know that ethanol did bring us to the party. I'm even thinking about putting signs on the back of my pickup truck. Ethanol brought us to this party. You know, I think the farmers, we need to work harder at supporting that tremendous, wonderful benefit. And it has taken basically a lot of the dips out of agriculture. So I'm optimistic, but ethanol is one of the factors that's going to stabilize our economy.
Paul's 100% right. The ethanol is what done it. Somebody said, asked me the day, he said, you know, what percent of our corn goes into ethanol? And it's, you know, if you put the DDGs back into feeds, it's still 25%. It's up to a third, basically. You know, we're looking at 5 billion bushels out of a 14 billion bushel crop that supposedly our government's saying we're going to go to ethanol. So without ethanol, it's not going to be good. Are we in the go-go range here right now? We're going to go back into, let's put the brakes on a little bit for the next couple of years, I think. But we're not going to get terrible. We're going to still be in here where you push a pencil hard, you do the things Paul said. We're going to still be able to make some money. It just isn't going to be quite as easy.
I'll take the final word on the show today. In 2005, the United States government asked the American farmer in the Midwest, the grain farmer, the corn farmer, if he could not only feed the populace of the United States, if he could actually fuel 10% of it. And the American farmer said, I think we can do that. They invested their own money in ethanol plants. They built them. They took the risk. They created enough extra acres, relatively speaking, out of everything that was available. That was by moving some other acreage around. And they managed in three bad years, in 2010, 11, and 12, when crops were not as good as they should have been, still to feed and fuel the United States. They did what the U.S. government asked them to in 2005, and I think they have done a magnificent job. Thank you, Paul Cooley and Wayne Nelson, for being with us. I really appreciate having you here on this special edition of our programming.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
It's National Eggnog Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1809, Kit Carson was born, an American frontiersman. His last words when he died in 1868 were reportedly, "Wish I had time for just one more bowl of chili." 1826 marked an eggnog riot at West Point Military Academy. When informed that their Christmas eggnog would be alcohol-free, cadets in North Barrack No. 5 decided to make their own eggnog with alcohol. Of course, the party eventually got out of hand, and the artillery unit stationed at West Point had to quell the disturbance. In the aftermath, 6 cadets resigned, 19 were court-martialed, and many, including a young Jefferson Davis, were confined to quarters for more than a month. In 1914, John Muir died. Muir was a naturalist who was largely responsible for the establishment of the Yosemite National Park in California. Muir drew attention to the devastation of mountain meadows by sheep and cattle, leading to his role as father of the national park system. And in 2006, in the Chicago suburb of Villa Park, thieves stole a semi-tractor trailer filled with broccoli. It was valued at $50,000. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
The Night Before Christmas, a poem by Clement Moore. "'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas would soon be there. The children were nestled, all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mom in her kerchief, and I in my cap, well, we'd just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn, there rose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter, and away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw open the sash, and the moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to the objects below. When what to my wondering eye should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer, with a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be Saint Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all, as dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle mounted the sky, so up to the house of the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling I heard on the roof, the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he'd flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled! His dimples, how merry! His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth, it was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin, well, that was as white as snow. The stump of the pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye, a twist of his head, soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings. And then he turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside his nose, and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team, gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down on a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
Well, that wraps up this Christmas Eve Day edition of the Closing Market Report. Stay safe in your travels and have the merriest of holidays. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.